next up, we have Alejandro Puig. Alejandro settled in Forest Township, Richland County in 1991, where he and his late wife raised two daughters. His connection to Youth Initiative is mainly through his son-in-law, Dave, who is married to his younger daughter, Feliciana. Dave and Feliciana live next door to Alejandro with their daughter, Alma, who, according to Alejandro, is the new boss of the whole shebang. Alejandro's Meet Me Halfway story is entitled Cubans, Knives, and Grandmothers.
I'll take you up there. Here, what's going on?
Well, under normal conditions, these days, I feel really rather comfortable in my own skin, but at the moment, I happen to be completely terrified. And it's a good place to find myself at this point, being 65. I'm really grateful for it, even though, being comfortable in your own skin at this time means that you've got some wrinkles and some saggy spots, you know. But it wasn't always that way for me. Some of you know that I'm an immigrant, even though there's really no identifying characteristics for me at the moment. But I was born in Havana, Cuba, a few years before the revolution. And we came just not that long. My mother brought us, me and my four siblings. And so, when I was a kid, I was keenly aware of the fact that I was an immigrant, and it wasn't always a real comfortable sort of a situation. And I learned to speak English really fast. You know, I was 3 1/2. I was the youngest of five. And, you pick up language really fast at that age. I learned to cuss before my mother knew what it meant, you know, and I was in for a big surprise when she found out. And as I was growing up, because I was so, had become so American, you know, language is one of those things that you think in, and it changes your perspective. And so when we run across some Cubanos who are distant cousins of somebody that my mother had known in Cuba, even though we had grown up in a white working class neighborhood with Italians and Irish people and Polish people, who had all, by the way, had only recently become white. The Cubanos that we were hanging out with, they didn't know what to do with me. They didn't take me. You know, didn't really fit with them. And so, and it was really kind of similar with the white kids. It was like, you know, what's up with that name of yours? Where are you from? And even back then, I didn't say Cuba because, unlike so many of you in the audience today who know about Cuba, because it's kind of almost a celebrity nation for many people, back then you say Cuba and they didn't have any idea. So I said the Caribbean. I'm from the Caribbean. And they would say, oh, you're Puerto Rican, you know, because they knew about the Puerto Ricans because they had all seen West Side Story had just come out at that time. And I hadn't seen West Side Story then. My mother was raising five of us on her own, and I still haven't seen West Side Story aside from a few of the YouTube clips of the dance sections, which are badass. But I still haven't seen that film. But they said, no, you're Puerto Rican. I said, no. I said, yeah, you're Puerto Rican. And they look at me and they say, you got a knife? And as a matter of fact, I did have a knife. You know, it was a pocket knife. It was a little pocket knife in my hand, and I got it out, and they all backed up. It wasn't even open. They all backed up. And so that's when I realized that certain objects are animate. sometimes you go into a place and certain things are just like, it's like they're alive almost. So this story is about me and a knife and two of my mother's brothers. They're twin brothers, identical twins. Little short guys with jet black hair and dark skin. They didn't look like the rest of us, you know, they had straight hair. They looked like Arabs. And they had those little shorty Cuban legs. I don't know if you've ever noticed. There's kind of a certain line of Cubanos that they got these real long torsos and these little short legs. Both of these guys were like that, and they didn't look anything like anybody else in the family. It would make you wonder, you know, I mean, Grandma, you know, maybe, you know, maybe Grandma. But anyways, they were my uncles. They were incredibly exuberant guys from the time they were little. They would argue for hours on end or make mischief for hours on end or whatever the case may be. And they had wild times when they were kids. They organized all the neighborhood family. There were so many cousins in that neighborhood. And they got water balloons. On a really hot day, I don't know if you've ever been to South Florida in the middle of the summertime, when it's hot and it's humid, they got these water balloons. They got up on the apartment building behind my grandparents' house on the top floor on the roof, and they had dozens of water balloons, and then the public bus showed up. With the windows down, you know, it's hot. And they just bombarded the thing, you know, it just plastered. And a lot of people got scared and they got wet. And then they ran out of ammo. And this old lady hops off the bus. And she looks up, she says, "There they are!" And the whole bus emptied and came tearing up the steps. And, you know, I don't know how that story ended, but, you know. And so they, as they got older, they continued to pull pranks. And there's one more water balloon prank that I need to tell you about because it kind of relates to the rest of the story here. And that is that my grandparents were well-to-do. My mother came from, you know, well-off, a wealthy Cuban family. And my grandfather was a law professor at the University of Havana. And I don't think Juan and Enrique, these two uncles of mine, one was named Juan, the other Enrique, I don't think I said that earlier. I'm not sure if they were in college at that time yet, but they had one more water balloon prank, and that was when they were having a really fancy dinner party, and they waited for the guests of honor to come, and they were hiding on the porch roof with a parapet, and when that guy showed up, and I think he was one of the members of the Supreme Court, because their grandfather, you know, Juan and Enrique, my great-grandfather, served on the Supreme Court of Cuba. And so there must have been some bad blood there. And they just creamed this guy. And then they took off. They were gone for like a week, you know. And they were like, you know, they were hiding out in, you know, garages of friends and stuff, and they were bringing them food. So these guys were wild, you know. And so, as I mentioned, my grandfather was really well-connected attorney, and he taught at the university. And when Juan and Enrique entered university, there was a fellow student there, and his name was Fidel Castro. Fidel was a student of my grandfather's, and he would come to that house occasionally, and they would talk about politics. And Fidel was a political activist. And trying to figure out, you know, how to deal with the tremendous corruption that was happening in the country. And so, you know, he would show up there, and they knew him. The family knew him. You can say what you want to say about Fidel's politics, but he was a really brilliant individual. And after the revolution happened, when the revolutionary forces finally marched into Havana, and, you know, the standing government had split. You know, by that point, they'd lost the war. Juan, he took his family, and he split. he came to the States. Enrique served in the administration until 1962, from 59 to 62, and he was Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. He served in an office with Che Guevara. And here again, say what you want about Che Guevara, he was a committed revolutionary. But he was not a central banker, and he was in charge of the government's treasury, the country's treasury. And basically he dismantled the entire banking system. You have a country, you need to have some sort of a central banking system. Enrique got to the point where he said, I can't, this isn't working. You know, I need to leave. And because of the family connections, he was allowed to go. And he landed in Florida, and he gave a press conference. I mean, he was a high-level official in the Cuban government who defected. And by the way, we were all welcome in the United States immediately. I mean, we received the golden carpet for any kind of immigrant. I mean, immediate green cards, because we were fleeing a communist country. In 1960. But Enrique, he landed in Florida in 1962. And he gave a press conference. And what he said was, the best thing the U.S. government can do is just kill all those Cubanos on the island. And this was the beginning of a really serious rift in the family, and also between these two uncles, who are identical twins. It's like a part of their body had been severed for both of them. And one vowed that he would never speak to Enrique again. Okay? So time went by. They both lived in the same neighborhood. We lived outside of Philadelphia. Enrique lived not that far from where my mother was raising us. And Juan lived out in a place near a place called Kutztown. It was about, I can't remember at this point, but maybe a couple hours away, the drive. Not unlike what we have here, you know, hills and creeks and rivers and wooded, you know, areas and, you know, farm fields. And it was a fabulous place for a young guy like me to hang out with my cousin, little Juan, who we called Juani. And we had a blast. I mean, we were tearing around, raising havoc, really. I mean, it's embarrassing at this point in my life, but raising havoc with other living creatures, you know, not humans, which I think my mother was relieved about, because she was happy to get me out of the suburbs where I could get into a lot more trouble than that. So I spent a lot of time with Juani, and then time came when we were out there that they had planned a family reunion. It was about 1967. I was 11 years old. And it was thought that maybe these two would finally find some peace with one another, my two twin, my uncles who were identical twins, Juan and Enrique. And so they planned a family reunion. It was another you know, hot day in the summertime. And people started to show up, and there was a little bit of kind of some tense moments at first when those two saw one another, but everything seemed to be going fine. And Juani and I were out. I don't know what we were doing, but we had a lot of girl cousins, and we didn't really want to hang out with them at that point in our life. And we were off, you know, off by the creek doing something, and I had a hunting knife on my belt. You know, I mean, I was 11, and it was a good-sized hunting knife with a 6-inch blade, and it was in a sheath. And, you know, suddenly there started to be a big commotion. Now, I want to tell you, I mean, many of you know this, you get a bunch of, you know, a large Latin family together, and there are going to be high-volume moments. And oftentimes, you know, they're really rather joyous, high-volume moments, and someone's laughing and telling stories, and everyone's just in a big uproar. But this sounded different, and it got our attention. And we, Juani and I showed up. And what we showed up to were a bunch of people screaming and crying, and the women trying to get these two grown men to stop beating on each other. And my uncle Enrique was looking like a rabid dog on a short leash, And Juan had blood running out of his mouth. And he sees me, and he says, "Give me the knife, I'm going to kill him." And just then, the sound, it was like suddenly I was in, like the, you know, a stadium, and the crowd was roaring. And it was, you know, I mean, every family was screaming and yelling, but it was bigger than that. That's what it sounded like. All of a sudden, I was in this situation that I couldn't quite figure out what to do, you know. And then he understood that he couldn't catch me. I was fast when I was 11. But my cousin, Juani, he could have caught me, but he was standing with me. And Juan turns to his, he knew that I wasn't going to give him the knife. He turns to his son, and he says, "Get the knife from him. I'm going to kill Enrique." And again, the sound is just like, rah, it's going to roar, you know. And in that moment, I hear this quiet voice, and I swear it was my grandmother, who I hadn't seen since 1960. She spoke English, but she spoke English with this really beautiful Spanish accent. It was like she was talking in my ear, and she said, "Throw it in the lake." And I'm between, there's this big lake by where the picnic was happening, and I'm between Juan and Juani, who are both coming for my knife. And at that point, I take it out of its sheath. And the crowd is like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, there's like everyone is screaming. And I throw it. And when I throw it, it's like silence. Nothing. It's like, oh, it's just like the curtain dropped. No more sound. And you can hear the knife. Whew, whew. Cutting the air as it goes out and falls into the lake. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Alejandro. Thank you very much.